Hi, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring music, news, events, and interviews about the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting freedom, health, wellness, sustainability, and justice for all. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. In this episode, we're featuring Serena Farb, born vegan, in her Vegan Van Tour USA. Serena Farb is a science educator, speaker, and vegan advocate, and she holds degrees in biochemistry and policy studies. After the break, I'll be featuring news of a vegan event happening on October 3rd, a court trial in Utah. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. We're very fortunate to be joined by Serena Farb. Welcome, Serena, and thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you so much for having me, Marlene.
Well, I am thrilled about all the work that you do, so we'll hear all about that you've done for years, and then also your new adventure with your vegan van tour, so I'm really excited to hear about that.
It just kind of happened. The universe just kind of pushed me in this direction. I've wanted to kind of go on a speaking tour for a while, but the van part was new, and a friend of mine had been living in a van that she converted herself for a couple years and was ready to sell it, and I got the idea it was just plain white, that it would be really cool to cover it in vegan information and drive around in that and be educating people as I go, maybe do activism from the van and then speak and do activism along the way as well. So that's kind of what happened. And then I bought the van and I designed, it's a vinyl wrap. So the veganizing it was covering it in vegan information. So I designed the vinyl wrap and then took it to someone who basically printed it on the van. And then I, decided to give up my apartment and travel around living in the van.
That's great and very noble. And I have to say, the van is beautiful, so that's interesting to hear.
The passenger side is the one that I designed first and was most sort of invested in. And it basically says, you know, what you eat is a personal choice, who you eat is not. So it really has that ethical messaging. I designed that one first, and then I wanted to make sure, especially because I'm organizing a vegan climate march to take place in 2023, that I wanted to have some environmental facts and messaging on the other side. So the driver's side then has some environmental facts about the impact that animal agriculture and eating animals has on the planet. And then the back has just kind of a statement and a question, you know, asking people if we care about justice and we have options in our life and one causes violence, exploitation, and harm to others, and the other option, eating plants, doesn't, why not choose that nonviolent alternative? And then it also has a QR code that people can scan to download a free vegan starter guide.
Thank you, Serena. And on the driver's side, right, I saw the environmental message and the future is vegan. That's powerful.
Yes.
And, yes. And of course, the beautiful photo of the bovine, the cow,
mm-hmm.
and the chicken. The chicken has the side view and the bovine has the frontal, front face view. Very beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, that's amazing. You're so talented, just really wise and talented. And so let's hear about your tour, where you're going and what we can expect and how people can participate.
Really, it will really be starting in October. I will be speaking at the Midwest Soul Veg Fest in Kansas City. And then the following week, I'll be on the East Coast in Philadelphia speaking at the American Vegan Center. And then after that, I'll kind of just start going down the East Coast, heading towards Florida, and then maybe through the South. And I'm just asking people who are along, you know, my basic path to reach out. Especially, I would really, really love for students at any university or high school along the way who want me to come speak to their classroom or school club or, you know, do some outreach and vegan education on campus with them. That would ideally be the audience that I would most like to reach. But anybody that wants to set up a speaking event with me while I'm in their area and help me promote it is gladly appreciated, and I'm just kind of working at a grassroots level.
I like that, the grassroots level. Yeah, and I think that will be the inlet that you are a professional speaker in all your experience, because I know from hearing from teachers that they've been stifled about sharing the vegan message many times in the classroom.
Yes, it's definitely much easier to have someone else come in from the outside than like you do it yourself sometimes, because then your job isn't on the line.
Yes, and I also really like your podcast, The Science is Gray. Let's hear about that too.
Thank you. Yeah, so, and that is actually the second season of that will be launching in the next week or two. That's basically about the intersection of science and social justice.
Thank you, Serena. And again, I think it's spectacular and powerful with you yourself and your van and the vegan messaging on your van, really profound. And of course, all your stops for official speeches. But again, like you said, everywhere you go, whether you're parked or on the highway, it's vegan messaging. And the fact that you are born vegan, and of course, that's your website name too, Born Vegan, bornvegan.org. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, yeah, bornvegan.org, especially in Kansas.
That I was raised vegan in Kansas, and not just, you know, eating a plant-based diet or anything like that, but actually being taught about justice and the importance of taking a stand for justice issues, even when they're unpopular, even when we're in the Midwest and what we're doing seems weird or, you know, crazy, and kind of taking that to everything I do, but particularly with regard to non-human animals. But really, I was taught to stand up for justice for all beings, for the planet, even if it's not the trendy or popular thing.
Yes, I respect you. And I've noticed that in all your speeches, that you bring the holistic veganism perspective into it.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm all about the holistic messaging.
Yeah, thank you for that. So on that note, we know that veganism is not a diet, yet food is a huge part of that. So let's hear about just some ideas for others who are on the road.
So I'm in a unique situation because I do have a converted camper van. So what I'm doing for food might be a little different than other people on the road, but I'll give tips for both. For just general road trips, traveling, or, you know, flying, however you're going, I definitely recommend people pack and bring your own food beforehand, or at least snacks or things you can grab. Because, I mean, that's what I, you know, sort of learned growing up in Kansas. Don't count on being able to eat at the restaurants. Bring your own snacks. So that's one. The other is there's a great app called Happy Cow that shows you the vegan options, vegan restaurants around in whatever city you're going to around the world. I use it all the time. It is amazing and super helpful. But usually in the van on my own, I try to cook pretty simply and healthfully for myself. Specifically, my van does have solar panels on the roof that are connected to electricity inside. So I have an Instant Pot and a mini tiny USB rechargeable blender. So I use the blender to make like a smoothie in the morning, and then I can use the Instant Pot. I cook a lot of like rice and beans type of stuff, or to keep it really simple, I cook rice in the Instant Pot, open a can of beans, eat that with lettuce and salsa, or soy sauce, or some steamed veggies that I threw in with the rice. A lot of really basic things like that are kind of how I'm eating along the road in my van.
Serena, I really appreciate the work that you're doing, especially with your vegan van tour, and that you have the questions right on the van written out, and of course you have the images of the animals. I think that your van traveling through space and time is going to help uplift the consciousness, and part of that uplifting of consciousness is helping the general population to really seriously look behind the door, look behind the curtain of what is involved in animal agriculture and for food and other products, that the massive suffering and fear that the animals experience. Do you think that that might open up a window of opportunity to help uplift the consciousness so that people will look and talk about it?
Absolutely. I mean, that's definitely my hope with it. And my message, both with the van and what I'll be speaking on, is about creating a paradigm shift. I think planting seeds, even if people don't see the van and, you know, go vegan immediately or anything like that, but I think just planting those seeds, laying that foundation in society as I drive, or, you know, anybody being vegan and advocating for this with other people, it's laying that foundation where it starts to open people's eyes up and get them to rethink how they view animals and our relationship with animals. And I think that is key to really shifting the whole paradigm and creating a very quick, potentially peaceful transformation.
Yes, yes, for sure. Thank you, Serena. So we're coming to a close in the interview for today. What additional messages do you have for our listeners? And then your contact information for those who'd like to follow along. Vegan Van Tour, USA.
Kind of the inspiring note I'll say is I think everybody can do activism in their own way and help support this peaceful transformation, no matter, you know, where they are or what their job or role, you know, or anything they're doing is. You can plant these seeds by talking to people wherever you go, whatever you do, just like I am driving with the van. It's, you know, entirely possible for everyone to be part of this. You can find me on Instagram, YouTube. My website is bornvegan.org. And more information about the van tour is bornvegan.org/van-tour. And hopefully I will actually be sharing some of my travels and like what I'm eating in the van and things like that on Instagram as well. So if people are interested in a little bit more of like the vegan van life, they can go there to see that as well.
Okay. And also for scheduling for speaking tours, for speaking engagements.
Yes. For that, contact me through my website via email. And please, even if you don't have experience organizing something, if you want something or you want me to come to your workplace or school, please just send me an email and we can work something out.
Thank you, Serena. And I have the vision of your vegan van out in front of businesses and schools and everything everywhere.
Thank you.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you very much, Serena. And thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you for having me.
And I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow, in Worcester, Massachusetts. We're listening to the music of Will Tuttle from his album Animal Songs. This is The Pig Song. After the break, I'll be featuring snippets of the live streams of Wayne Shung, a vegan animal rights activist who is on trial along with another member of DXC, Direct Action Everywhere. Welcome back from the break, and thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow, in Worcester, Massachusetts. Before the break, we were joined for an interview with Serena Farb. Who is living and traveling in her vegan van on a vegan van tour along the U.S. East Coast and Southern Coast as well. About that at her website, bornvegan.org. And now here's some clips of Wayne Shung's live stream explaining what's going on with vegan activists in Utah. This is a collage of various clips from his September 2022 Facebook page. We'll start out with hearing a little bit of their speaking event at Salt Lake City Veg Fest.
Hi, Wayne and Paul, back in 2017, did an investigation into a Smithfield Foods-owned factory farm. It is the largest pig factory farm in the country. It spans almost 30 miles from end to end. It's in Beaver County. Wayne and Paul are facing a felony prosecution as a result of this investigation that they did in 2017. So we are having this little forum here with Wayne and Paul. We'll ask some questions that the judge is not allowing to be present in the trial. The judge has recently ruled that they're not allowed to show footage from inside of the farm. They're not allowed to really talk about animal cruelty. A lot of this stuff is being left out. You know, why this target? Why did you decide that, okay, this farm in the Utah desert is what we're gonna go after and what we're gonna try to expose?
Thank you, everybody, for sharing.
Yeah, so this is honestly kind of one of my last big investigations. I've been going into farms and slaughterhouses for, gosh, since 2007. 2007 was the first time I walked into a slaughterhouse, and when I first walked in, it was actually a Chicago slaughterhouse. The thing that struck me about it was just how easy it was. And this is like a fairly small slaughterhouse, like a genuine kind of mom and pop facility that was slaughtering like a few hundred lambs and calves a week. It was like a lamb and baby cow slaughterhouse. And even there, it was just like I walked in the middle of the night, and I think a worker even saw me, and they just said, whatever, I don't care. Like, this place is a mess. There's chaos and cruelty and blood and chemicals everywhere. It's just not particularly interesting to me that there's a random Chinese dude walking around in here, which was surprising to me. So, but Smithfield Foods is a different ballgame. Smithfield is the largest pork production company in the world. It is part of a global conglomerate owned by one of the richest men in the world, Wan Lan, and his company, WH Group, slaughters hundreds of millions of pigs across the entire world. And the central reason we wanted to come here was not just because of its size and systemic influence. The Utah state legislature, just a couple years prior, had passed what's called an ag gag law, criminalizing the act of taking a photograph inside of a factory farm. All the traditional nonprofit organizations had stopped doing investigations. All the workers themselves, who historically had been a great source for whistleblowing footage inside factory farms, all of them were terrified because they know if I just take a photograph of criminal conduct, even if it's criminal conduct unfolding in my company, I could end up in jail. And people have been charged with these sorts of crimes for merely taking photographs. There's a member of your community here in Utah, Amy Meyer, who was charged for merely standing on a public street taking photographs of a farm worker abusing a downed cow. So when you're in a state like that, not many people are going to do investigations. And again, this is a very systemically important farm. 1.2 million pigs, the single largest pig farm at the largest pork production company in the world. We decided somebody has to take a look inside. And when we took a look inside, what do you think we found? Row after row after row of thousands and thousands of mother pigs and gestation goats.
There's a lot of politicians who are taking money from abusive industries. They're taking money from corporations that are abusing animals. And so really, they're getting paid to abuse animals, you know?
Because they know if they don't make these extraordinary efforts to suggest that we're violent people, deny us access to evidence that we otherwise should be able to present, then the facts will come out and people will see that taking a pig to the vet is not a crime. Thanks, Wayne.
Paul, do you want to talk a little bit about what the FBI did and how it came to that?
Yeah, thanks, Curtis. There's no way to know exactly what phone calls were made by who, but at some point after this massive factory farm of this, the world's largest killer of pigs, WH Group, which owns Smithfield Foods, does billions and billions, I think $27 billion in revenue last year. And one of the most powerful industries, one of the most powerful companies in the state of Utah and frankly in the world, calls the FBI and says, hey, someone stole $100 of our property. We don't care about the $100 whatsoever, but we don't want them showing this footage to the New York Times and others. Then the FBI got involved and went on a multi-state pig hunt, essentially. They went to a sanctuary here in Utah with a search warrant, guns drawn. I've seen the body cam footage, and it's horrific. It is FBI agents with guns approaching sanctuary volunteers, putting the screws to them, telling them, you need to tell us everything you know right now. They don't have a lawyer. Tell us everything you know, or else you're going to be complicit in this crime. And then they went to Colorado and did the same thing. And there, they found two piglets who they thought fit the description of the potential piglets. And they had, in their search warrant, the ability to extract their flesh for the purpose of DNA testing to determine that they were, in fact, or were not, the piglets in question, or had the same DNA that all the Smithfield pigs do. And they put a pole with a wire around the neck of one of the pigs screaming bloody murder, essentially volunteers and operators, some of the most empathetic, amazing people on the planet, subjected to seeing their family with a pole stuck to their neck while they took 10 snips, essentially, giant scissors, and literally cut off a chunk of the pig's ears. And the agents themselves couldn't even find it themselves to do the second pig. This is not what we're paid for. I imagine most of those agents got involved thinking I'm going to be taking down child trafficking rings or doing something that's actually helpful instead of chasing down these two piglets at a sanctuary and mutilating them in front of other animals and the caretakers. So it's just absolutely disgusting. So when these different states and these industries in these different states are spending all this money to lobby and to get these ag gag laws passed, it's for a very specific reason, because they don't want you to see this exact footage that we're talking about. So that's a cue for us to say, oh, you don't want us to see it? Well, guess what? Like, from now on, ag gag law means we're coming and people are gonna see it. Looking from like your ball, you know, in any of the ways that matter. And so you're just like, wow, all these persons lined up as far as the eye can see. When one side was 100% gestation crates, for as far as the eye can see, the other side had like the group housing where they would go before they were pregnant in the small amount of time that they're not in the gestation crates. Just sorrow. And it's not just what you see, it's what you hear. So you definitely hear these horrible sounds, these horrible screaming, misery, suffering, filth, injury, death, disease, all the worst things you can imagine just under one roof.
But there are two individuals in particular, Lily and Lizzie, two piglets that were actually rescued by the both of you and others that were there. Can you talk a little bit more about your intentions and why Lily and Lizzie, a little bit about their story?
So when we do investigations, we never have the specific intent to take anybody out. We're there primarily to document. And as an act of mercy, you know, when there's an animal that's so defeated, so broken, that inevitably she's going to die and it's going to be a sad and terrible way to die, we try to give them some help. That's it. Because it symbolically shows us how we should treat all of them. Right? What we do for this one is what we should do for the world. And so it's a mechanism for us to just showcase that there's something really awful happening. That's not just this systemic conceptual evil, but that's really real and concrete and individualized in a way that you or I, or when you think about like my dog suffering or my child suffering, you can really make it concrete when we save one of the animal's lives.
Great, thanks, Frank. This trial is happening on October 3rd. So why don't you all talk a little bit about, you know, what people can do to help that are here, that live here or don't live here.
If you want to come up and bring your body to Washington County and be outside the courtrooms in the mornings, I think what's going to happen is that people are going to be on the sidewalks, exercising their First Amendment right, not trying to intimidate anybody, but trying to show support for a cause, for individuals who are facing prosecution and for individuals who are facing far worse than we can ever imagine on these farms. You can be there and you can stand outside and help the media show that, like, hey, this is an issue that a lot of people care about, and that's great. Afterwards, people will then, I think, go to a different building to try to watch the trial on the WebEx. Of course, in line with everything else, the judge is like, no one can come into the trial. It's really messed up.
Hey everybody, Wayne here, and I'm heading out to Utah tomorrow to face trial in relation to an open rescue and investigation at Smithfield Circle 4 Farms. So I got one night left with my kids, my dog and my cat. One night left with my family. On Monday, I fly to Utah, start preparing for trial. It's going to be an epic struggle between Smithfield and the animal rights movement. And, you know, Paul and my freedom is on the line. So we're betting our lives on this fight because it's a fight that really matters. But I think the thing I want to convey in this live stream... The industry isn't just targeting me and Paul and trying to imprison us for rescuing animals from factory farms. They're targeting all of you because they know when people know the truth, they will fight back. And there are three things they've been doing with extraordinary effect over the last 40 years that we have to collectively fight back against. The first is they deceive us, right? When you see all these happy animals and their marketing, cows and free range, chickens outside, what they try and do is silence you. And many of you may have heard of the Dairy Pride Act. If you literally call soy milk, this is a food that we in our culture and Chinese culture have been eating for thousands of years. If you just call it soy milk, that could be against the law in the state of Missouri. If you take a photograph inside of a factory farm, even as an employee trying to report criminal conduct, you could be the one who ends up in jail. And so the goal with this is to silence people who have some truth to speak. But if they can't silence you and they haven't misled you, they crush you. So now they're trying to crush us and crush you too. Because this prosecution isn't just about throwing me and Paul in prison. It's about intimidating everybody who has a concern about what happens to animals. It's an attempt to intimidate you into not speaking your truth. No matter what happens in this trial, no matter what happens to me and Paul, as long as we speak our truth, we will win. So that's my advice to you. Speak your truth. And if we do that, no matter whether we get 10 years in prison or whether we're acquitted and we set a groundbreaking precedent for the right to rescue, this movement will continue to make progress and we will win in the long run. We started DXC just about 10 years ago. We started the conversations at DXC in the summer of 2012. What this trial is ultimately about is what our society stands for. Do we stand for torment or do we stand for compassion? And if we're given an opportunity in court, we're going to make that argument in court. But given the constraints that are being placed on us in court, a lot of these arguments are going to have to be made in the court of public opinion. And that's why I'm asking all of you this week, get out there on social media, hashtag Right to Rescue, link to the righttorescue.com page, share live streams like this, because this is how we win, if you speak your truth. What's up, everybody? It's Wayne here, and we just had probably the most important hearing to date in the Smithfield trial. This is a trial involving the largest pig farm in the nation in southern Utah, the largest pig farming corporation in the world, Smithfield Foods, which is owned by WH Group, which is itself owned and financed by the Chinese government.
And I'd like to thank Wayne Chung and DXE that we just heard clips from Wayne's live streams concerning the October 3rd court case in Utah. And a special thanks to Serena Farb in Kansas for joining us on Vegan Nation, and best wishes on her vegan van tour. Her website is bornvegan.org. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.org. Please join us again next week at the same time. This is Marlena, Massachusetts, wishing you a safe and pleasant day. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation.